Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty here on a Farmer Friday. We would love to hear from you all throughout the show today. Our phone lines will be open, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. Or send us an email, radio@agphd.com. So again, it is Farmer Friday. Basically, every Friday throughout the year, we just talk to farmers from around the United States and Canada. And if there would happen to be any other foreign country calling in, we're perfectly fine with that, too. I actually have an email we're going to get to shortly from someone in Australia. I don't care what country it is. Agronomy is all basically the same. We talk about drainage or irrigation. You know, it's water management. We talk about fertility. We talk about seed varieties, seed selection, and then, of course, weed, insect, and disease control, just to name a few of the things that we all as farmers have to be experts on the farm in order to hopefully make a little bit of profit by the end of the year. So again, if you'd like to call in to our show, our phone lines will be open all throughout the day, 844-44-AG-PHD. Right now, though, let's get to the AG-PHD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
Okay, I said Australia. We actually had an email from today, and so I'll get to that one first. It's Ron from Australia, and he says, G'day, Brian and Darren. Please find attached photos of corn plants that are tillering. His question here is, he just says, we've had hot and dry conditions since planting, but this is furrow irrigated, and even the dry land has had a heap of fertility up front, thinking this has contributed to the tillering. Any thoughts? And thanks for a great show. All right, so Ron, I would just tell you, tillering is very common in corn plants. He said he had one white corn variety and another just a regular number two yellow corn variety. Anyway, we see tillering happening all the time in corn plants. It does make a difference on the variety. Some varieties just have a lot more tillering than others. And yes, the fertility has an enormous impact in the tillering as well. So if you have a variety that's prone to tillering and you have ample fertility and at least halfway decent moisture, along with some, you know, really good weather, good growing conditions, then you're going to see quite a bit of tillering. Now, there are some people who say, well, if I see tillering, I need to plant thicker. That is not necessarily true. That was the old way of thinking, I would call it. And the more that we study this and the more that we learn about it, the more we realize, you know, that's probably not the way to go. Now, I got to apologize because in Australia, I don't know what you use for units of measure or anything, but I'll just talk to you about in the United States, what we use is we buy 80,000 kernel bags for seed corn. And we are looking so much at how many kernels we're planting on a per acre basis. So usually we figure we can get about 2.5 acres out of that bag. Or let's put it this way, that would be somewhere around 34,000 population in our area. But I'll just, for easy figuring, I'll just use 30,000. Okay, so if we planted 30,000 plants per acre, what we're shooting for is you take the 30 on the 1,000, 30,000, take the 30 times 7 and take it times 10, and that should be the yield that we're in the range of. So 30 times 7 is 210, 30 times 10 is 300. So by planting 30,000 plants per acre, we should be in that 210 to 300 bushel range. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because it's common for some people to believe, oh, I have all this tillering, I need to up my population, and then they start putting out 34,000, 38,000, 42,000, and they're not really gaining much for yield, and it's not paying. Seed corn costs a lot of money today, so we have to look a lot at the economics. And could it possibly pay to bump your population? It's possible when you see lots of tillering, but we don't typically see that anymore. What we see is the tillers will kind of disappear a little bit over time as the plant cannibalizes itself. It will take that energy out of the tillers and put it into the ears of corn and the kernels of corn. So no, I'll just tell you, we do a tremendous amount of research on lots of seed varieties every year. Probably, I'm just going to guess off the top of my head, 300 seed corn varieties per year we're doing research on and doing all these comparisons. And varieties that have a lot of tillering versus varieties that have little tillering, we don't really see this big difference in yield. So I don't care if it tillers a lot or it doesn't. That's usually not a big factor when we're talking about corn production. Okay, next one is from Connor, who farms down in Texas, and he says, I'm on a no-till, not never-till, but a no-till farm, and I recently saw a video talking about an inline vertical till subsoiler. Now, they did this barrel test where they buried the barrel halfway into the ground and filled it with water in fields in different types of tillage. Well, the field with the subsoiler, that moisture ran through it a lot better, so there was better water infiltration. I was wondering what y'all thought about it and if y'all had any experience with it on sandy ground or any other tips on getting rid of compaction layers. Look, Connor, we've done a lot of things, and here again, we do lots of research in different states and in the United States, and I would just tell you that you've got to find a way to reduce compaction. Now, there are some people who are never tillers who will try to use certain cover crops. So, for example, tillage radishes, maybe turnips, maybe even going alfalfa for 3-4 years. And hopefully that can reduce some of that compaction issue. What we often say to people is, look, if you're, let's say you're conventional till, you're going to switch over to no-till. Before you switch over to no-till, right before, and especially if you want to be a never-tiller, get the compaction at least reduced as much as you can. And yeah, I am a believer in running some type of vertical till subsoiler. We do that on our farm occasionally. Here's another thing I'll bring up to you. There was a study done fairly recently in Nebraska where they had shown that occasional tillage in no-till actually can be pretty beneficial because you can reduce some of the stratification layers, you can reduce some of the compaction and things like that. So I don't have any issue with that. You can certainly try that. Yes, it can help you in sandy ground. It can help you in heavy ground. Either way, compaction layers absolutely can form. But I, again, if you want to try the cover crop method, and hopefully some of that can bust up the compaction, that could possibly work for you as well. Well, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
Pentair Hypro 3D nozzles are your premier choice for fungicide applications. Syngenta fungicide application field trials have shown Hypro 3D nozzles provide a yield advantage of up to 10% over other nozzles, maximizing the return on your fungicide investment. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Start your crop off right with the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Our spike design excels in variable soils and shatters compaction. Plus, the unique shoulder firmer encases a seed to maximize seed-to-soil contact. Order yours at farmshopmfg.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side, so it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support. Let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
You're looking for soybeans that give you the yield you want. But when it comes to fighting your toughest weeds, you also need flexibility. Introducing Extend Flex Soybeans. Elite genetics with triple tolerance to dicamba, glyphosate, and glufosinate. The yield you want, the choice you need. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here on a Farmer Friday. Our show today is all about you. We'd love to have you call in. The number is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's what Jake did from up in Saskatchewan. Jake, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Brian. How about you?
Excellent. So we have basically no snow on the ground here, which is very unusual for the middle of December. What's it like up in your area?
Pretty much the same. We've had a lot of warm weather, so the only thing we've got on the ground is sort of a thin layer of ice.
Yeah, well, we have to assume it is going to get cold in Canada, so that's no big surprise. So how did things turn out for you this year on the farm? How were all your crops?
We had an all right crop. It was really dry up here. We really didn't get our first rain until the end of June, which has become a bit of a common thing over the past few years. Had a couple wet weeks in the beginning of July, and that was about it. So given all that, we had a below average crop, but actually, I mean, wasn't too bad with grain prices where they are. We're pretty happy, but it's dry. I mean, we didn't get anything to replenish any soil moisture, so we're into winter now with basically zero moisture in that soil profile.
Yeah,
and no snow.
Yeah, I was just talking to somebody the other day, and they were digging down deep in the ground, and we're finding no moisture at all. And for us, we're coming off our two wettest years ever in 2018 and 2019. So I'm not saying I like drought, but it's like after 2 years of flood, you know, at least I don't have to deal with flood now. But it's funny how it can go from one extreme all the way to the other. So we're kind of in the same boat at this point where we're really dry going into the spring. So like on your farm, is there anything you're changing or at least thinking about changing for 2021 because it is so dry right now?
I feel your pain on that one, Brian. We were extremely wet in the fall of 2019 trying to get the crop off.
Yep.
Refilled all the dugouts and refilled everything and then used it all up in
yep.
the past year. So
yep.
couldn't be more different. And I mean, you know, one of the things that I guess we've learned over the years is that the growing season moisture is just so much more important than what we get during the winter.
Yeah.
You know, the snow that we get just doesn't contribute much. So we're trying not to worry about it. I mean, one good shot of snow in March when it comes down wet like it does then completely changes everything. So we won't be changing anything. We'll be going into spring with the expectation that at some point it's going to rain.
Yeah.
And we're going to hope for the best because that's all we can do.
Sure.
You know?
So you raise a lot of different crops on your farm. Is there any certain direction you're leaning toward, I mean, just different in 2021 versus what you've done, let's say, the last couple of years, maybe because how commodity prices are today?
The nice thing about the way that commodities have rallied is that it's been pretty broad-based. I mean,
yep.
hard red spring wheat would be sort of the weak sister of everything else. I mean, lentils, peas, flax, canola, durum are all looking really strong. So we don't really need to go on a search for anything to find profit. So we're going to stick to our rotation and just try and do a good job of what we know how to grow.
All right, last thing I'm going to throw out for you. You just listed six or seven different crops. Now, on coming from the Midwestern United States, where it's basically corn and beans, and there are a lot of guys that they find that too complex, so they're like, no, I'm just going to go all corn and keep it simple. So how do you keep track of like six or seven different crops, or how many total crops do you even raise on your farm?
Well, it's about that many. Yeah, I guess we're used to it. I mean, it's the way we've always done it. You never know which of those crops is going to be the winner because
yep.
any of them can be in the right year. This year it happened to be flax
yeah.
and large green lentils. Next year it could be, canola. So I guess we do a good job of record keeping. We are very careful with our herbicide applications
yep.
and really think about where the sprayer is going and what we have in the tank. And, the great thing about a rotation like that is we know that our soils are being well looked after.
Yeah.
There's lots of different things going on in those fields. It's good from a herbicide resistance standpoint. There's a lot of benefits to it. It's just takes a little bit more management, that's all.
Yeah, but it certainly can spread your risk. And I know in your environment there, it can be a little bit challenging. So a little risk management probably will help you in most years. Well, again, we've been talking to Jake from up in Saskatchewan. Jake, thanks for calling in today. Appreciate it. Best of luck to you.
Thanks. Same to you.
All right, let's go next out to Ohio. We got Evan calling in. Hey, Evan, how's it going today?
Hey, it's going good. How are you?
Great. I hear you want to talk about corn ears.
Yeah, so the guy that called in about the tillering kind of got
yeah.
me wondering about this. And I actually had a guy ask me this summer, does putting on a second ear, is that a bad thing? And, you know, this might be a dumb question, but I was curious what your thoughts were. You know, certain hybrids, they and certain populations as well. They, you know,
yeah.
And the growing environment they put on, start to try to put on a second ear. And I guess my question is, does that, you know, rob nutrients and energy from that main ear to potentially add on more yield there?
Yeah. Okay. So excellent question. Let me just first say that the main purpose of any plant is to reproduce, and it wants to put on as many viable seeds as possible. So if it has the moisture, if it has the nutrients, if it has the heat, the sunlight, all those things, it's going to try to produce a great first ear, and then, yes, it will try to produce the second ear. Usually the second ear does not take away from the first ear. But I'll tell you this, if you're consistently seeing a lot of second ears out there, what we've usually found is that by increasing the plant population just a little bit, then we can kind of cut back on that second ear thing, and we have a little bit more for yield in total. So this is a little bit different than that tillering question than we had early, because we don't seem to see a lot of difference in yield. Tillers, lots of tillers, few tillers, whatever. We can see some difference with this second ear thing. Now, let me throw one other thing out at you, because here's where we see the most second ears in your farm, and I don't know how it is in yours, but on our farm, it's around the end rows. And I was just talking to our people about that here this fall, and looking at enough stuff, and I'm like, guys, are we stupid here or what? Why don't we just really fertilize well for that and plant a higher population? Let's say it's our outside four rows, because we know that gets a lot more sunlight, especially the outside two, three rows. And there is a potential on those outside rows where we normally get 225 bushel corn, those outside just few rows could get 300. And I'm not saying this is this great big deal or anything else, but maybe we should just bump our population a little bit there because we have so much more sunlight. So anyway, I would just answer your question by saying, yeah, that's not really ideal where we want to have some second ears, but by the same token, if you normally don't, and then for whatever reason this year you just had phenomenal conditions, well, you can't outguess things in terms of planting population. In other words, you can't say, well, this year I know is going to be phenomenal, so I'm going to plant 5,000 more plants per acre. There's a lot of cost to that, and there's some risk. So, you know, I wouldn't get too worried about it. It's a little bit beyond our control, because it just, a lot of times, just comes down to the weather and what kind of year we're having.
Gotcha.
That all right. Sense. Okay. Well, thanks for the call.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. Yeah, it's always challenging when you go out in your fields and you look and there's something a little bit different. So whether it's the tillers, whether it's second ear, whatever it is, when we talk about the second ear, it just reminded me of a funny story. So I have a first cousin who has been a trader at the Chicago Board of Trade for almost 30 years. He does a phenomenal job. He's just really even-keeled. And anyway, he's been successful. Well, my dad went out there to see him one time years ago. This is probably 25 years ago, and went out to Chicago, went down on the floor of the Board of Trade, and my dad liked to give people a hard time sometimes. So he's asking a couple of these traders that were from the city, knew nothing about corn. They weren't from the country at all. He's like, well, okay, you're trading corn here. How many ears does a corn plant have? And the one guy's like, boy, I don't know. Six? The other guy's, oh, I think it's more than that. I think it's like eight or maybe 10 ears. It was pretty comical. Here's the next thing. For all of us farmers, we usually associate one ear for a corn plant, but we have often seen two, and occasionally we'll see three. You actually could have 8, 10 ears on that plant. And so sometimes this is what we'll do, especially with young farmers. We'll split that corn plant down the middle and show them, okay, here's where an ear would go, here's where an ear would go, here's where an ear would go. And it's interesting what that plant actually can potentially do. So maybe we'll get corn plants with 10 ears someday. I would like to harvest that kind of yield. Well, we'll be back with more of your phone calls right after this.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide, brand new chemistry, three no-excuse modes of action, zero modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech Fungicide from BASF. That's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
A lot goes into keeping a precision operation moving. The inputs you choose have to deliver results. New Dallaro Complete Fungicide from Bayer offers unmatched consistency and the most complete disease control available. Your corn and soybeans are protected and yields higher even in unpredictable conditions. With Dallaro Complete, you get results you can count on to help keep your precision operation running smoothly. Always read and follow label instructions. To learn more, visit DallaroComplete.us today.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
It's about time. Applied at Planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind in-furrow Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. It's a Farmer Friday. If you'd like to call into the show, we'd love to visit with you. The number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. We're going to jump back to the phone lines right now. We got Lamar calling in from Ohio. Lamar, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Excellent. I hear you were working on some drain tile today?
Yes. Yeah, working on tile, hauling manure. Beautiful day here in Northeast Ohio.
So I assume that at this time of year, it's normally not a decent day when we're talking December 11th, right?
Right. That's what I just told my son about 15 minutes ago. It might be 10 years before we get another day that's good in December.
So. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And it's funny, too. You know, the older you get, what I find for myself anyways, I remember back to those years where there was one year we were able to put anhydrous on like the second week of December, and very unusual for us. And I always remember that week, you know, and that's like the only time in 30 years that we were able to go out and do tillage in the middle of December. So anyway.
So December we can haul manure on dry grounds. Not very common around here.
No, that's for sure. So how did things turn out on your farm this year?
Crops were great. Best beans we ever had. Corn was probably about as good as we ever had.
Awesome.
We were blessed. We were blessed with the rains. We got dry a couple times, but we were really lucky.
So what are you thinking as you go into next year? Anything that you're doing that's a whole lot different for 2021?
I don't think so. As good as the crops were this year, I don't want to change just for the sake of changing, you know. We were lucky, and I don't think no real big changes.
Were you able to get fertilizer this fall, or do you mostly put manure on?
We put manure, but I I guess I've never put fall fertilizer on here. We get a lot of rain, and I just rather wait till spring and do it then.
Yeah, absolutely. So with this tile that you're working on right now, is this new tile you're putting in, or you're fixing some stuff, or what?
Just fixing some wet holes. Where we're at right now, we got it every 30, but there's a couple, three spots in between the 30s that need a piece ran into it, and then I'm putting wash gravel in that and hopefully get the holes dried up.
Yeah, good. Have you always had tile on your farm? I mean, like for decades or anything, or is this something relatively new?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's decades. It's I fixed tiles that was put in the 20s. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, there were a lot of people that didn't think there was much tile out here in my state of South Dakota, and we found some old tile lines that were put in back about that time, too. We're not sure if it was late teens or early 20s or what, but yeah, it's amazing to me that some of that stuff from 100 years ago still can be at least even somewhat effective.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is. It is surprising. It is surprising. Then you think about how they put it in, and oh, my goodness.
Yep, exactly. So, yeah, my dad was telling me about that just basically he'd heard stories from his dad that, you know, in the wintertime they'd go out and they would cover the areas with straw or something so the frost didn't go in deep, and then they'd go manually dig, you know. And today we're complaining because, oh, maybe the air conditioner isn't perfect in our tractor or whatever. It's think of the work that those guys did, the hand labor, unbelievable.
Oh, it is. It is. Just everything. Everything used to be how much easier it is now, but it's still hard. But
yep. All right. Well, hey, Lamar.
I got a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Question for you. Now, on a row starter that's on the seed.
Yep.
Corn.
Yep.
How important is the zinc and the sulfur?
Okay.
With that starter.
Sure. So sulfur a lot of times can hurt things in there. It can negatively interact with some of the other micronutrients, and it can actually be fairly hard on seed. All depends on the form, but we got to be real careful about the rate that we're running on the sulfur and to some degree the zinc as well. So is there anything else you're putting out there? Are you putting any biologicals? Are you putting insecticide or fungicide or anything, or is it literally just fertilizer?
Just fertilizer.
Okay.
So this year, but you were talking about changes. I am going to try Pivot Bio on a few acres this year. So that would be, I guess that would be my biggest change.
Sure. Are you going to do that foliar, or are you going to do that at planting time?
At planting.
Okay. The reason why I bring this up is when we start talking about any biological products, there are certain zinc products that will really negatively interact with those biologicals. So we've done a bunch of research on this, and when you get a zinc chelate, that's certainly better. You just have to look for a relatively safe form. But when you start talking like ammoniated zinc, for example, a lot of people go, oh, ammoniated zinc's cheap, I want to go that way. Well, yeah, but like in 1 hour, if not even that, in some cases it's been minutes in our research, it'll kill the biologicals. Right. So if you didn't have a biological in there, then you could probably get by with it. Now, here's the other thing I'll tell you. If you ever want to safen an in-furrow fertilizer, just put a bunch of water with it. That's a trick we learned from Francis Childs. He was the first guy raising 400 bushel corn in the United States. And so we've done that for years. So, no, I'm not super worried about your zinc and sulfur. If you keep the rates really low, use safe products, you should be fine. But I'm much more focused on the zinc. I like that one in-furrow a lot better than the sulfur. Zinc doesn't move very well in soil moisture. So if you lay that on the soil surface, it will not go down even 1 inch in a year. But the sulfur, on the other hand, you lay that on the soil surface, it'll get down, it'll move through, everything will be fine. So usually, like on our farm, we're broadcasting sulfur, we're banding zinc.
Okay. I put the majority of my sulfur with when I'm side dressing.
Sure.
32.
Yep, absolutely.
But I wanted to put a little bit in the fur and see if I get a bump from that.
Too dangerous
in furrow.
Right. I mean, 2x2, different. But in furrow, yeah, we really try to avoid that sulfur, unless it's some tiny little rate in a blend or something.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't think I would go that direction.
Okay, very good.
Now, and I will say, too, there are plenty of other ways to put that sulfur on. You can put it on with your herbicide. I mean, you can broadcast it out 2x2.
Soil applied
herbicide. Yeah, I mean, so lots of things you can do. But anyway.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Well, thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Yep. We used to have plenty of sulfur on here because where I'm at, the steel mill.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we talk about that often. We used to have this nice free sulfur source, the acid rain that we used to get. And Darren and I kind of joke around about this, like, well, we have clean air now and we're living longer, but man, we got to spend more money on the farm for fertilizer.
Yep, spending a lot more on sulfur. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks, Lamar. All right, let's go next down to Texas. We got Dan calling in. Hey, Dan, how's it going?
Hi, how are you?
Great. I hear you wanted to comment on corn a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking of, because I wanted to give my cow some corn, and I just wanted the best ways how to plant it.
Best ways to plant corn?
So you're giving the grain or you're giving corn silage?
Grain.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah, it's interesting. And when we look at raising corn specifically for livestock, one of the things that a lot of the seed companies, I don't feel, look at enough is just the nutritional content of each hybrid and how they vary. So we just focus on trying to raise the most bushels that we possibly can. And it really starts with understanding the soil, getting a soil test, fertilizing properly for your yield goal, and then coming up with what that right planting population is going to be for your area. And what we generally advise is to go about, let's just say you're raising 210 bushel corn in your area. We'd divide that number by 7, and we'd say, well, we need about 30,000 population to get that done. That'd be a good place to start. So getting that right population, getting the right fertility out there, and then planting it timely. So if you're in Texas, I'm going to guess that timely planting is probably in March sometime, just a guess. That sets you up for the highest yield. Well, very good. Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate the phone call today.
Yeah, and if you have more questions and specific questions, just send us an email, radio@agphd.com, because it's a pretty big question you asked. We could literally talk about that all day. So if you got specific things, just let us know and we'll visit with you about that. All right, well, stay tuned. We'll get back to your phone calls right after this.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
When it comes to innovative herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Panther, Credit Extreme, and Cheetah for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these challenging times, we know you're under pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
Resistant weeds got you down? Knock out tough-to-kill herbicide-resistant weeds like Palmer Amaranth and Water Hemp with Tough 5-EC. Manufactured by Beltrim Crop Protection, Tough 5-EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of actively growing broadleaf weeds. Add Tough 5-EC to your post-emergence tank mix for enhanced control with no concerns about residual or carryover injury. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5-EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Together, we can get tough on weeds. Always read and follow label instructions.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe next spring with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed treatment from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking to have your seed pre-treated with Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
It's not about how quickly you come out of the gate with nitrogen fertilizer, but how strong you finish the race. High Striker uses patent-pending chemistry to stabilize your nitrogen in a form that lasts longer in your crop's root zone. Because for high yields, your nitrogen must last longer, so you can finish the season stronger. Visit agrotechusa.com to learn why so many growers are going the distance with High Striker treated nitrogen.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on a Farmer Friday. That means we're taking your calls and agronomic questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also email us, radio@agphd.com. Let's head down to Iowa. We've got Jim with us right now. And Jim, I get nervous every time I take a call from Iowa ever since this summer, just wondering, oh my goodness, where's Jim at exactly in Iowa, and what kind of weather did he have this year? So, Jim, I'm walking into this cautiously. Talk to us about 2020.
Well, I'll tell you what, the last time I talked to you guys, I told you we were going to have probably the best crop we've ever had. But obviously Mother Nature had a change of plans. I was north of the derecho by about 30 miles, but the spigot ran off and we ran out of water. But we did have what I would say better than anticipated corn yields and probably average to below average bean yields.
You know, that I've heard more of that than you think, that guys were pleasantly surprised. I'd really say the same thing for our farm, that our rain completely shut off too. And it wasn't as good as we had hoped, but it was way better than what I feared it would be.
Oh, I mean, when I got into the first field combine and I thought, wow, this is outstanding. And every field basically for me held up above the 200 bushel mark, except for one where I had rootworm extended diapause that I never knew I had. But other than that, I was pleasantly pleased.
Hey, speak about that rootworm thing. I'm hearing more of that this year too. What is your game plan for that going into next year?
Well, I'm going away from double pros. I'm going to go to smart stacks on that. I just feel that I'm going to have to. It caught me by surprise, and I just feel like that's going to be my next move forward.
Yeah, I get it. And you know, there has been a huge trend in the industry away from smart stacks, and it sure felt like there was a little less pressure for a few years there. But in our area, too, it's been ramping back up. And of course, there's all the concern about resistance and do I need to use insecticide and that. I think planting the smart stacks corn is a pretty good first step.
Well, obviously, when we start looking at where we're at on our marketing right now for 2021, you know, you can start realistically justifying the excess cost or extra cost, I should say. I won't say excess, but I think that's the only way I'm going to be able to go this year.
Yeah. How about on the soybean side, Jim? And I know when you look at that, if you had corn rootworm issues this year in the corn field, certainly if soybeans go in that ground next year, there's going to be corn rootworms on those volunteer corn plants. Does that change your plan, or am I telling you something you haven't heard before?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm hoping that from a harvesting perspective that we did a pretty good job of getting most of it into the combine and keeping it in the combine. I know it's once it's there, it's pretty hard to get rid of.
Yeah, it sure is. No doubt about that. We were just talking the other day about using volunteer corn herbicides with the first post-emerge pass in soybeans. I know that's a good way to knock them out. They don't need much time to make it through a life cycle on the root system of volunteer corn plants. Speaking of the corn-soybean mix, are you switching anything up for next year? Are you doing more corn with the way the markets have gone or more soybeans?
Strictly 50-50 rotation. Corn on corn this year. In this particular territory, it was bad to a complete disaster, to be honest with you.
Yeah, drought doesn't seem to do corn on corn many favors most times. I'll agree with you on that.
You know, obviously, hopefully the bean market stays strong, if not get stronger than it is now, and you know, you're able to justify a little bit more with going with beans now than you were, say, the last 2-3 years.
Yeah, I've been encouraged by that too. And, you know, going into this spring, at least we've got that hope with good prices out there that a guy can lock in some of that stuff and hopefully make some money. Talking with Jim down in the state of Iowa, who's 30 miles north of the derecho, but could have used a little bit more rain this season. Jim, hopefully things turn out great for you next year. Hopefully you're set up for a good crop.
Thank you very much. Good talking to you.
You bet. Thank you. Set up north of the border, we've got Dave with us in Minnesota, north of the Iowa border I'm talking about. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing well, thanks. And you?
Good, good. So how'd things turn out for you this year? It looked like Minnesota was set for a great year as we were in the middle part of the summer. Did you close it out well?
Yes, it was an outstanding year. We had a nice early planting season, and we had timely rains, plenty of growing degree units, and a harvest that was just outstanding because we didn't have any heavy-duty rain or cold, damp weather. The corn dried down to below 15% rather willingly, and so, yeah, harvest was really fun this year.
All right, so what you just described there, Dave, is what I think should be the average year. Now, we talk about that as being an outstanding year, but man, we've been through some tough ones, and I would like what you just had for this year to be the average year for our crop production. That would be fun.
Well, I'll go along with that.
I think we might take it for granted, though.
Yeah, and my cousin with whom you were just speaking kind of had a year, I guess. Although I haven't spoken to him directly about how that stuff went, but I plan to give him a call. So.
Well, and normally when Jim's that much further south and you think, oh, he's in that Iowa ground and he's got just excellent soils there. But boy, if Mother Nature doesn't want to play nice with you, it's pretty tough.
No, I've often felt that we're kind of in the Garden of Eden as far as Minnesota goes right here. About 30 miles south of the Twin Cities. It seems to be a good area.
Yeah, well, it certainly was this year, that's for sure. So did that set you up going into next year then when you have that kind of harvest season and really pretty ideal weather through most of the growing season? Are the fields in great shape heading into 2021?
Right. We were able to finish up soybean harvest way early, and then we started no-tilling rye and some hairy vetch in those fields in early to mid-October, and we had stuff that was 2, 3, 4 inches tall by the time it really shut down. So that was a real plus to have enough time to get our cover crops in. And I used to do some fall strip tilling, but after having done a multi-year test of strip till in the fall with the P and K and sulfur and zinc, and then coming back with a pass in the spring with the nitrogen, as opposed to putting it all on in one shot in the spring, the student researchers from Carleton and St. Olaf College found that there was virtually no difference in the yield. So why make two trips when one will do it?
Yeah, that's what we're always looking for, is how can we do things to be more efficient on the farm? And you've definitely got to take a look at those things depending on which cropping system you're doing. Because like you described, doing no-till and cover crops in your area, boy, there's a lot of guys doing conventional till up there. So you're certainly standing out a little different from what many of your peers in the area are doing. What did you see with some of that type of farming this year? Did you see that you had more of an advantage than normal, or was it about the same as what you'd usually expect?
Well, I felt that after having some fields that were our 23rd year with no-till and strip-till on that ground, the ground is in such great shape, and the systems in the soil are in place to provide support for really high yields. particularly the mycorrhizal fungi helping out with phosphorus, and then the organic matter contributing nitrogen along the way too. But I have seen a tremendous amount of black ground up here. And I go out and do quite a bit of public speaking, and people ask me, why is it that Minnesota farmers kind of insist on doing that? And I don't have a good reason. I thought I used to, but I don't anymore.
No, I know. It's hard. And honestly, a lot of times you get into a system and people just keep going. Well, that's just how we do things. But kudos to you, Dave, for trying something different and sticking to it. Thanks for calling today. Really appreciate it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
I need the solve without the sell.
With NK Seeds, I get people I trust who show me where their hybrids and varieties fit in my field without the heavy sell.
So I get solutions that solve my problems from a partner who knows that success matters.
Find your solve at nkseeds.com.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio here on a Farmer Friday. We're going to jump right back to the phone lines. Got Ron calling in from Wisconsin. Ron, what's happening on your farm today?
No, we're just out gripping the ground up a little bit.
Enjoying this nice December weather, I see.
Yes, we are.
So, just out of curiosity, how many times have you been able to rip your ground in the middle of December in the past?
In Wisconsin, not very often. I can only think of, to be honest with you, maybe twice.
Yep. Now, hey, let me ask you just a little bit more about this ripping that you're doing. Is this something you do every year? Are you just doing it this year because you have time, or how come you're out there?
No, on the low ground, I'm a tillage person.
Sure.
And I believe on the clay compacted areas that have been compacted for the last 3 years, it needs it bad.
Yeah. Yep. And I assume when you start talking about the last 3 years, it's been wet, and so it's been hard to get out there. Yeah. Yep. Same thing for us.
Yeah, we've been, mudding it in, planting it when you shouldn't, and picking it when you shouldn't, and just...
Our
rainfalls appear to be 5 inches, 6 inches, 5 inches.
Yep.
We can't get half inch, 2 inch.
Oh, I know. It all sounds too familiar to me. It's exactly what we've gone through. It's really been a challenge. I mean, and when I tell a lot of people, oh, we got 36 total inches of precip last year, they go, well, that's not much. There are a lot of areas that they get 60 inches. And I'm like, well, yeah, but we're cold and we're used to 20. When you're used to 20 and you get 36, it definitely creates some problems. And it all depends on when it comes. So we had record rainfall in the month of September just a couple years ago. Well, what does that do? I mean, we completely lost a whole bunch of our ground because of that. The rivers flooded and everything else, just very unusual. So talking about like that compaction that's on your farm and with your ripping, how deep are you going with that ripper? Did you find how deep the compaction was and you're trying to set it just below that?
Trying to. on the second pass, I'm accomplishing it.
Oh, so it's that hard, and it's taking two passes.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm lacking. I don't have a big tractor like you guys show on TV.
Oh.
Mine's missing a couple hundred horse.
yep, we've been through that. Many years we had low horsepower, and then when we got to some of those good times when corn hit like $7, we're like, yeah, we're getting a bigger tractor for once. Maybe we'll get $7 a corn again someday and we can repeat that.
I do have a complaint. I called you guys this summer.
Okay.
And Darren was complaining I wasn't sharing moisture with everybody. our last rainfall was July 10th. We received 2.6 inches, and it was well needed.
Yeah.
And the crops took off. We tousled, and it was the best-looking crop I had going probably in my life up here.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that was the last rain we had until about August 25th.
Yeah, ours was July 5th, and then we had a little shot, but, I mean, it wasn't even half an inch. And
we had 3/10 and 1/10.
Yep. Same kind of thing for us, and then we went all the way till it was November. And
oh, boy.
Right. So, I mean, we went from, hey, we have unbelievably high water tables, and the tile lines are running like crazy, and then July 5th, last rain, it was 2.3 inches, and thank goodness we got that, because, yeah, that was it. And, I mean, then everything has dried out since. Now, I mean, it was great getting our fall work done. We never lost a single day all fall. So got plenty of things done, and we even had to invent new jobs for our guys on the farm. It's like, okay, what else are we going to do here? Because we got everything done we were trying to get done. It's very unusual. So on your farm, as you go into next year, you're getting this ripping done right now. Is there anything else you're trying to get wrapped up before things do freeze up on your farm?
Get the banker to cooperate. Before he freezes up any harder.
Yep.
When I tell you we didn't get rain, when I talked to you this summer, I farm a lot of sand ground, and I'm talking organic matter from 0.05 to 1.2.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's rough.
And when you don't get rain every week on it, it's not so good.
No. Nope, I'm with you. We have just a little bit of that kind of ground. Fortunately, most of our ground is fairly heavy, so, I mean, we were fine. I mean, we also had what I thought was going to be the best crop ever. It was looking so phenomenal. And then when you get no rain for the last three and a half months out of the growing season, yeah, that takes the top end off, but it still wasn't terrible. But I will tell you, we just a couple of days ago got all our yields matched up with our soil tests, and it was just like a straight line up where the higher the organic matter, the higher the yield. The higher the cation exchange capacity, the higher the yield. So, yeah, I exactly understand what you're talking about. It's just we're lucky, like I say, we don't have a big percentage of that kind of ground. But, yeah, I feel for you because, I mean, on sand, without rain, it's tough going.
Yeah, it's been different. The last few years, I mean, last year was the you thought I had irrigation because we caught everything perfect. And this year we had tried, we run fungicide again late, and it quit raining after we did it.
Yep. Same kind of thing for us. Well, hey, Ron, thanks a lot for calling in today. Really appreciate it. And best of luck as you wrap things up on your farm for the year.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Enjoy your program.
Yep. Thanks a lot. All right, we are going to jump back to the Ag PhD mailbag. I got an email in from Matt who says, hey guys, I'm in a bit of a low pH situation. I just got my soil samples back and I need some serious lime. But my local co-op has run through their lime piles and now they're waiting on lime from the quarry. My agronomist said my fields are on the list, which basically means a next fall application. So do you think that I should put out some Pell lime this year as a Band-Aid until next fall? Yes, Matt, I think you should, because you got some pHs in the fours and a whole bunch in the fives. So I'd at least get something out, get anything out that you possibly can. That's definitely going to help you. Also, he asks, I've sent you my soil tests and I'm on 2.2 acre grids. If you see anything glaring, and other than base saturation K, I know it's low, Brian, he says, let me know. Anyway, he says he farms in western Iowa, south just a few hours from us. Oh, and by the way, one other quick thing he said, is there a real dry fertilizer shortage out there? A few companies I price check with said they are out of MAP and wouldn't get any more till January. Yeah, Matt, we actually had trouble right at the end for us when we were fertilizing in October and into November just a little bit, that we were struggling to get phosphorus. So yes, there was a little bit of a shortage, but it was such a great year for applications. That's really what it was. It's not that there's an overall shortage. It's more of a logistics issue than anything else. Anyway, looking at soil tests, I'll tell you this, and it's like I say almost every time I look at soil tests, lots of variability. So you got some areas on your farm where you're down into the teens on phosphorus levels. Well, you need some there. Well, you have others where you're in the 100 kind of range. Well, you're in good shape there. So it's evening a lot of those things out. And that's the advantage to smaller grids like you're running. You can see where those variances are at and hopefully get those cured up. So, I mean, I see many spots where zinc is really low at a part per million, copper at a part per million or less, boron at like 0.4 of a part per million. And of course, yes, the base saturation K. So, yep, few things there that you can continue to work on. All right, let's see. Next one here, just a comment, and I don't have the name, I apologize, but this one, they were talking about one of our Ag PhD episodes, and the comment was, these guys are so smart. Wish I had one of them as my hired man. Hey, thanks for the comment. We appreciate that. And I'm sure we can put Darren to work on your farm, so let us know. Another one, Fabricio says, thank you for the show. Big fan of your work. Please post Ag PhD Radio on Spotify podcast. So Janelle, maybe that's something for you to look into, Spotify. And the last one I got for the day is from Tom. He says, how do you recommend killing horsetail? So field horsetail and scouring rush, I look at them as exactly the same. Basically, just like how I look at water hemp and Palmer pigweed is exactly the same. I realize technically they're different, but they're basically the same thing. Field horsetail and scouring rush are very challenging weeds because they don't really have leaves per se. It's just these like hollow stems and they're very waxy. The only thing we found that's been successful controlling those has been Gramoxone. And obviously you've got to spray that before you plant or after harvest. Other than that, I will tell you field horsetail and scouring rush do really well in wet soils. So cure the wet soil issue, get your drainage taken care of, and feed the crop as best you can. So hopefully the crop can choke out that particular weed. Thanks for the question, Tom. Appreciate it. All right, before we go, just want to say thanks to my sister Janelle, who's running the controls today. Appreciate that. Thanks to everybody who called in or wrote in with questions. We appreciate you, and thanks for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. And now, stay tuned for Shark Farmer Radio.